This Hitch to Homicide episode contains murders that are extremely graphic in nature. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. Thanksgiving weekend 2016, Knoxville, Tennessee. The Guy family has gathered to celebrate Thanksgiving on Golden View Lane. Joel and Lisa Guy are breaking bread and carving turkey with their three daughters from his previous marriage, their children, husbands, significant others, and grandchildren. Also in town for the family gathering is 28-year-old Joel Michael Guy Jr. The only child shared by Lisa and Joel Sr., Joel Michael was a bit odd, a loner. And what transpired in their home that weekend was nothing short of a Hollywood slasher movie where the victims weren't merely murdered, they were dismembered, rendered in a cocktail of chemicals, and cooked. This is the story of Joel Michael Guy Jr., money, greed, and murder. Hey y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. And for our friends here in Kentucky.
Okay.
Yes. Welcome, y'all. Welcome, y'all. Welcome, y'all. And have you had anything to eat yet?
Jeet yet?
Yeah, jeet yet.
We're all about, in the South, we're all about feeding everybody.
That's it. That's it. So, but I wanted to throw an invite out there for anybody in the country here, in the USA, wherever you're from, if you have a certain way that you say welcome, Let me know.
In your state or your neck of the woods?
That's it. That's it. Because I do all the other countries, but let's get some people going here.
And if you can't tell by Rob's voice, he has a cold.
Yeah, I'm a little under the weather.
He's a little gravelly.
So if I squeak every once in a while, you'll know what's
going on. But God love his heart. He's here for it.
I'm pushing through, baby.
Well, wherever you are listening, be sure to like, rate, and review the show. You can subscribe to the podcast anywhere, if anywhere you want to listen.
Yep.
You can also join our closed Facebook group, The In-Laws and Outlaws. This was a place that I actually went and asked, do you want to see and hear more holiday true crime during the holidays?
Right.
It was a resounding and an overwhelming yes. So here we are.
Okay.
I think we had yes, bring it on, yes, or don't care. And then I added one in, don't care. Yeah. And
I like the Die Hard thing.
Die Hard's a movie.
Yeah.
And somebody thought that that was you. And I was like, no, that's me.
I thought it was funny.
So we're doing Thanksgiving. If you're on your way to see your relatives, well, we're doing a story about relatives and Thanksgiving, and it's a true crime podcast. And if you listen kind of carefully to the opening there, this does not end well.
Yeah.
So be thankful for your family and wherever you're going. I hope you're going to be safe.
Yep.
Before we get started, let me thank some sources. Wikipedia, ABC Channel 6 WATE in Knoxville, NBC Channel 10 News in Knoxville, CBS Channel 8 WVLT, also in Knoxville, Court TV, the Kingsport Times News, Film Rise, True Crime, Killers Caught on Camera, and the Tennessee Court Records.gov.
All right. Well, you ready?
I am.
All right, let's do it.
Joel Michael Guy Jr. is born on March 13th, 1988, in Luling, St. Charles Parish in Louisiana. Louisiana.
Okay. Louisiana.
Going south.
There you go.
His parents are Joel Michael Sr. and Lisa Madeer Guy. He's the only child of Joel and Lisa, but Joel Michael had three older stepsisters from his father's first marriage. His sisters are Shandy's, Michelle, and Angela.
All right.
And from what I can gather about the girls, they lived part-time with their dad and stepmom, Lisa, mostly in the summers. But by all accounts, these girls are all daddy's girls. Gotcha. I have seen a few interviews with them. They love their dad very much, as well as their stepmom, Lisa.
Okay.
Joel Sr. is a pipeline engineer designer. He's this hardworking guy. He's really smart, but he's also really down to earth. He's a good old boy. Mm. He liked to hunt. He liked to fish. He liked his boat. And Lisa was a stay-at-home mom who loved spending time with her family. I read that they both had a wicked sense of humor, and they loved to get out on their boat. They loved to be outdoors. Just an all-around great couple of people who loved hard and were loved in return by their friends and family.
An all-American family.
All-American family, living out the dream in Knoxville, Tennessee.
There you go.
So when Joel Michael Jr. is born, and that's what they call him, Joel Michael, to distinguish him from his dad, the senior, that's right. What I will call him as well.
Okay.
He's kind of an only child for part of the year. And I think his parents, Joel and Lisa, really doted on him. They were truly in love. These two were soulmates. And this child, their son, was a symbol of that love that they had for each other.
Right.
And they really sort of spoiled Joel Michael.
Gotcha.
But Joel Michael was an odd kid. Mm. He was smart, but he kept to himself. His parents indulged him because they loved him so much. But according to more than one source, Joel Michael didn't want to stay at home with his parents.
Really?
He wanted to go away to boarding school.
Really?
You know, that's usually the thing your parents will, like, threaten you with. Yeah. Either straighten up and fly right, or we're sending you off to boarding school.
Yeah, it's boarding school or military school.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think this was probably a dagger in his mom Lisa's heart, because she truly wanted to be and do everything for this kid.
Was she like a helicopter mom?
I don't think she was a helicopter. Well, I don't want to say that. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't. Maybe she hovered, but not so much that she didn't let him go away to school.
Right.
She just doted on him. Anything he wanted, she made sure he had it.
Right.
He started high school at Hanville High School in Butte, Louisiana. I also saw
Butte.
I knew you were going to say it. I knew you were going to say it. I also saw where some pronounce it Butte.
Okay.
But it's named for André Claude Butte of France. So Butte.
Nice Butte.
I'm trying to say all of these towns correctly. I honestly really do. Every podcast, I try to say them correctly.
I know.
And I know how people don't like it when something is mispronounced. Like Louisville. It's not Louisville.
Or Louisville.
Or Louisville. It's Louisville.
Yeah.
But John Michael wants to go to this boarding school, and they like to indulge him, and he's so smart. So in that spirit, Joel Michael is accepted at the Louisiana School for Math, Science, and Arts in Nuckatash, Louisiana.
Okay.
Now, it's here that he meets Michael McCracken. Michael will become Joel Michael's best friend. And maybe more.
Mm.
I do believe that Joel Michael is homosexual.
Okay.
Not that it matters.
Yeah.
But we will discuss a little more about that later.
Right.
So Joel Michael goes off to boarding school, where he will graduate in 2006. Now, Joel Michael never had a job, not a summer job during high school, nothing like that. His parents foot the bill for everything.
Wow.
And he's a tad bit spoiled because of it.
Okay.
What was your first and worst job, honey?
Picking up rocks behind a trailer in the fields of Ohio behind a tractor in 90-degree weather.
I thought you were going to say sitting in the mall playing Our Lady of Spain at the piano store.
That was the second worst. Actually, that might be the worst.
That's one of my favorite stories that he tells. I could just see this little redheaded kid like, sitting out just a little bit from the entrance of the piano store, just out there, just playing his little heart out.
Well, let me give like a 10-second synopsis on that. I was waiting for an internship at a recording studio, and I needed a job. So I looked in the newspaper, and I saw manager trainee, Baldwin Piano Company. I'm thinking, hey, that's for me. So I went in, got the gig. They sent me off for 3 days for training, and then they slapped me in a mall, and I had to play Lady of Spain on an organ.
What kind of training is involved other than just like sit out here and woo the old ladies, which, by the way, Rob is very good at?
They train you how to sell pianos.
Little old ladies love Rob.
Yep.
Maybe it's because you can play Lady of Spain, honey.
That was probably it. Jeez. Yeah, that was the worst gig.
But he's never had a gig. He's never had a job. I used to sell men's clothes. I worked retail hell, which everybody's getting ready to walk into. If you work retail in the middle of the Christmas and the holiday season, hats off to you. I'm saying prayers for you. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah.
But this kid, Joel Michael, he never worked. Never. And his stepsisters are going to say he had the perfect childhood. Mm. He applies to and is accepted at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., where he will go and he will stay there for just one semester.
Really?
He will then transfer to LSU, Louisiana State University.
Gotcha.
Go SEC.
Yep. Hey, go Joe Burrow.
That's right. He was from LSU.
Yep.
But you know who else is going to school at LSU at this time?
Who?
Michael McCracken. And these two will be roommates off and on for the next few years. And when I say years, I mean 10, because that's how long Joel Michael is going to go to school.
What?
He sort of becomes a professional student,
yeah.
But he never gets a degree in anything.
Reminds me of John Belushi in Animal House.
That's true. It
Seven
is.
7 years wasted. I love that.
Just like John Belushi. He never gets a degree in anything. Mm. But I think he told people, and maybe even his mother told people, that he was studying to be a plastic surgeon, which, by the way, is something that requires medical school and a general surgery residency and then a plastic surgery residency. It's 14 years from undergrad to being a board-certified plastic surgeon.
That's not an elective.
Yeah, it's like stepbrothers. I was going to go in the family business kind of thing. And on top of that, being a doctor requires some amount of bedside manner, right?
Right.
And Joel Michael's really distant with people. Mm. He's an outsider, even with his own family.
Right.
He really didn't have friends. He had Michael McCracken. Maybe. Mm. But while he's meandering through college, being a non-matriculating student, which means he doesn't graduate.
Right.
His mother and father are paying for everything. Everything, tuition, room and board, a car, car insurance, pocket cash, cell phone, you name it, Joel and Lisa are paying for it.
And this is going on for 10 years?
This goes on for 10 years.
So he's like 28 by the time he's done with college.
He is exactly 28 years old.
Wow.
When bad stuff starts to happen.
Wow.
Meanwhile, Joel and Lisa have moved from Louisiana to Tennessee by way of Greenville, South Carolina, where they spent just 1 year. Mm. Joel was actually born near Kingsport, Tennessee, so it was kind of like coming home for him. I'm speaking of Joel Sr., by the way.
Gotcha.
So if I say Joel Michael, I'm talking about the younger. If I only say Joel, I'm talking about the dad.
Okay.
But in 2007, they settled into a two-story home on the outskirts of Knoxville in West Knox County on Golden View Lane. And by this time, Joel and Lisa have been married for 31 years. Mm. And they are still very much in love.
Okay.
Lisa has been working as a human resources / accounts payable / secretary at Jacobs Engineering in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. So I am assuming it was a very small engineering firm because she seemed to wear a lot of hats.
Right.
And basically, every dime Lisa makes goes to support her son, Joel Michael. And I believe there are even semesters where he isn't even going to school or going to class, and she's still supporting him.
Wow.
He's doing nothing.
Wow.
He's like the G in lasagna. Useless.
That was good.
Now, by 2016, Joel and Lisa are looking ahead to their retirement. Joel's three daughters by his first marriage, some of them are married, they have children, they're fully functioning adults, good citizens of the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when Joel is laid off from his job in 2016, well, he and Lisa decide it's time to retire. Let's have some fun.
Right.
So they put up the house for sale in Knoxville, and it sells right away. And by the time Thanksgiving 2016 rolls around, Lisa has put in her own notice that she wants to retire at the engineering firm. Mm. Her last day will be Friday, December 2nd. And not only has the house sold, they have to be out by December 13th.
Okay.
Joel texts the entire family, letting them know that the house had sold and they'd bought his family home in Sir Gowansville, Tennessee.
Okay.
So obviously they have the group family chat text, which we have too.
Right.
And Rob and I send serious information out to our children, and we usually get very non-serious replies back.
Yeah, if any.
And if I miss a stroke with my thumb while I'm texting, I usually get the, "Mom, are you having a stroke? Are you okay?" Yeah, yeah. When they know I'm fine, I'm just texting quickly. So when these two start talking about their retirement, it actually happens the month before, in October of 2016, before they sell the house and before Lisa puts in her notice. And they sit down and they talk about their budget and they talk about where their money is actually going.
Right.
And it's going to Joel Michael,
yeah,
who's fiddle farting around in Baton Rouge.
I can't imagine the total that they spent on this kid.
I can't either.
Jeez.
And these two start telling multiple people, that because they're retiring, it was, quote, time for Joel Michael to stand on his own two feet, end quote.
Yeah, think.
They tell Michelle, Joel's daughter, and Lisa's stepdaughter that Joel Michael would need to find a job because they would no longer be able to support him. Mm-hmm. They told Robin White, Joel's sister, that when they retired, they would no longer be able to financially support Joel Michael and that he, quote, needed to be on his own, end quote.
You think?
Yeah. And Joel Sr. tells another sister that they plan on telling Joel Michael at Christmas that he would be responsible for paying his own bills. But maybe, just maybe, Lisa tells Joel Michael before Christmas.
Oh.
Maybe she tells him that by 2017, we're cutting you loose.
Right.
I don't know that, but it makes sense. You have 2 months to find gainful employment kind of thing.
Right.
Because Joel Michael knows. Joel Michael has a plan.
Uh-oh.
On November 7th, he begins plotting his parents' murders. He starts buying supplies and keeping a notebook, a premeditation book or a murder book. He starts taking trips to Ace Hardware, to Home Depot, to sporting goods stores. He buys knives, chemicals, plastic sheeting, muriatic acid, which is a concentrated hydrochloric acid.
Wow.
Food grade hydrogen peroxide.
Jeez.
All kinds of goodies.
Wow.
On November 18th, he buys a bleach sprayer, extension cords, and a timer. And the next day on November 19th, he buys another knife. On the 19th, just 5 days before he drives to Knoxville, he goes to Walmart and buys two big Rubbermaid plastic bins. And here's his plan. And we know it because he writes it all down in his notebook.
Wow.
This is directly from his murder book.
Okay.
Get killing knives, quiet, multiple. Get carving knives to make small pieces. Get sledgehammer, crush bones. Bring blender and food grinder, meat grinder. Get bleach, denature. Get plastic bin for denaturation process. Does not matter where they're killed. Just get rid of bloody spots to prevent evidence of time of death, not the mattress or the couches. Get rid of bodies inside the house, there and my DNA already there. Open up doggy door to provide entryway. He needs to be blamed, not intruder. Flush chunks down toilet, not garbage disposal. Get plastic sheeting for disposal process. Get hollow point bullets just in case we'll be seen buying bullets. Just use computer room gun. So he like writes these things and then marks through them.
Wow.
Check to make sure there are bullets, last resort. He's not alive to claim her half of the insurance money. All mine, $500,000.
Wow.
Flood the house, cover up forensic evidence. Turn heater up as high as it goes. Speeds decomposition. Bleach reacts with luminol, just like blood. Douse area with bleach. Big sprayer. Lie. And then he has trash compactor? Question mark. The body gives times of death, so I need to work on my alibi. Don't have to get rid of body if there's no forensic evidence on the body. And then, in all caps, he has his fingerprints and DNA. So what he wants to do is try to frame his father for all of this.
Wow.
And while Joel Michael gets ready to come home with his supplies and a plan, for the first time in years, this is the first time he's come home in years, He's just getting his money and not coming home.
Yeah.
Lisa gets this house ready for her family to be with her and Joel on Thanksgiving. And I've seen some photos. I think she even had it decorated for Christmas, even though she had to have everything down and be out by the 13th of December. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody is super surprised when Joel Michael shows up for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They don't ever see him, like ever. He doesn't talk to any of them. One of his stepsisters even said she didn't know if he knew the names of her children, his nieces and nephews.
Wow.
He arrives that morning around 10:30, and Joel Michael, uncharacteristically, is hanging out with the family. Mm. And usually when he's home, when he is ever home, mm-hmm. he goes to his room and he doesn't spend time with the family. He just holes up in his room.
Wow.
But when Joel Michael's stepsisters start showing up, he's really chatty. And more than that, as you might imagine, as Lisa is packing up her house because she needs to be out, she's got all these boxes of stuff that belong to Joel Michael.
Right.
Because Lisa, like loads of other mothers, like me, have kept every little popsicle stick contraption and drawing from John Michael growing up.
Right.
And he has all these toys and beanie babies. And Joel Michael starts bringing down these boxes of stuff, and he starts giving away his toys and games to his stepsister Michelle's kids.
Okay.
And she's like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's really shocked at Joel Michael's behavior.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So Michelle, who's one of the stepsisters, when she's there, she actually brings some of her laundry to her parents' house. This still happens to us, and we have grown children as well. But Michelle brings her laundry to her parents' house that day because her dryer is on the fritz. And when she's outside getting her stuff out of her car, she can see two large blue bins in the back of Joel Michael's car. And she wonders, what are these for?
Hmm.
That's called foreshadowing.
Uh-oh, let me do this. Ready?
Mm. It's not good. But on this day, Joel Michael's talking to everybody. He's being social. He seemed to be, according to his stepsister Michelle, on her heels everywhere she went. Like, he kept following her. And also a part of the day was Lisa and Joel's dog, Jake.
Okay.
And Jake is a dog they pampered and loved like a child.
We don't know anything about that.
Right? Which sounds very familiar. And this, I'm just going to tell you now, nothing happens to the dog, okay? I'll tell you this right now.
All right.
Because he did have on his in his murder book to kill the dog, and then he changed his mind. Take the dog with me.
Okay.
But Joel and Lisa's house is actually equipped with security cameras. And I don't know if they use them to watch their dog while they're away. Rob, I'm looking at you.
I know.
That's what Rob uses the security cameras for in our house.
Yep.
Where's Scotty? Is he in his bed? Where's Scotty?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a Furbo, which spits out treats when we're away. We can remotely. Yeah, whatever.
Yes. But they did have security cameras.
Okay.
Now, by 10:30 that night, all three girls, their husbands, significant others, and the grandchildren left the house on Golden View Lane, but not Joel Michael. He stayed behind. He was spending the night. Mm-hmm. Now, the next day, Black Friday, Joel and Lisa are going to Sir Gowansville to take their boat to the new house, to this new location. And Joel Michael goes with his father for this trip. And Joel Sr. actually talks to one of his daughters and tells her they'd taken the boat to Sir Gowansville and they were leaving soon to get back to Knoxville.
Okay.
This is the last time any of his daughters would ever hear from their dad. Mm. And even though their daughters texted and called over the next 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, Sunday was even Shandy's birthday, nobody hears from them.
Okay.
On Saturday, November 26th, Lisa goes to Walmart in Turkey Creek, which is an area in Knoxville. It's a really nice area, actually. She buys groceries and is seen leaving on surveillance cameras at approximately 12:15 p.m.
Okay.
And while Lisa is gone, she leaves Joel Michael and his father alone. Now, we don't know for certain what happened because he's never spoken about it, but here's what experts have pieced together.
All right.
While Lisa is grocery shopping, by the way, she's there to get his favorite ice cream, Joel Michaels' favorite ice cream. Yeah. Joel Sr. is in a spare bedroom upstairs working out. There's a Bowflex machine in there. Michael attacks his father from behind, stabbing him 34 times with 42 sharp force injuries. The cuts were varying lengths from 1 to 7 inches long and up to 6 inches deep. His liver, lungs, kidneys, and ribs all sustained injuries.
Wow.
Now, Joel Sr.'s no slouch. He might be 61, but he's a sportsman, and he's in pretty good shape.
Right.
And Joel Michael is overweight, and I'm just going to say it now. He looks like a huge pansy. So Joel Sr. fights back. There's quite the struggle in this workout room, and the Bowflex is overturned, and Joel Sr. will have multiple cuts to his hands, defense wounds. Mm. But Joel Michael stabbed his father at least 41 times.
Gee whiz.
It was not an easy murder, and Joel Michael sustained injuries himself while trying to kill his father. He cuts his own hands, and he gets a severe cut on his left thumb. Okay. But it was over. And then he waits for his mother, Lisa, to come home.
Wow.
Based on the crime scene, Joel Michael attacks his mother as soon as she makes it to the top of the stairs. Because as soon as she enters the house with the groceries in her arms, she drops everything. The food will remain at the bottom of the stairs, bacon, lunch meat, and of course, Joel Michael's favorite ice cream and some beer. He attacks her from behind, stabbing her 31 times, severing 9 ribs.
Jeez.
Then Joel Michael went to work. He cut off their clothes with a knife, and then he cut their bodies apart. Joel Sr.'s arms were cut off and removed at the shoulders. Joel Michael cuts off his father's legs at the hips and also removes his father's right foot from the ankle joint. Then he cuts off his dad's hands, which he props up in a praying position in the workroom upstairs.
Wow.
Yeah. The same room where he stabs him to death, he props these hands up in a praying position.
Gee whiz.
As for Lisa, he severs her head from her body, but he cuts it off to a point, and then he just basically rips it away from her body at the second and third cervical vertebrae.
Holy Moses.
Her arms are dismembered at the shoulders and her legs cut off at the knees. Now, why is he doing this, you might ask? Well, remember the blue Rubbermaid Benz his stepsister sees in the back of his car?
Oh, yeah.
He now has those in the house, in the master bathroom, and he's cut his parents' bodies down so they will fit into the tubs.
Wow, this guy's twisted.
He's planning on dissolving their bodies. Mm. But just as he propped his father's hands up in a praying position, he took his mother's head and put it in a large stock pot in water on the stove and began cooking it on high.
Oh, my God.
So he has his parents' body parts in these tubs full of muriatic acid, hydrochloric acid, along with liquid fire drain cleaner and bleach. And his plan is to make his parents' bodies so liquid he can dispose of them in a public waterway. Then he's planning on lighting the house on fire to get rid of the rest of the evidence. And he had 5 gas cans filled to the top in the house.
Jeez.
But remember, Joel Michael's hands are injured from where he killed his dad.
Right.
So he goes to Walmart in Turkey Creek, the same Walmart his mother went to get his favorite ice cream.
Right.
And he gets hydrogen peroxide and bandages and Neosporin, that kind of thing, to tend to his own injuries.
Right.
But it's not enough.
Okay.
He's worried he's going to lose his thumb.
Wow.
So he drives 600 miles back to Baton Rouge so he can be seen on campus for free at the Student Health Center.
Okay.
He needs to be stitched up. He was, quote, worried about losing my left thumb, end quote.
Jeez.
This guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst thing that you're worried about?
Yeah. When he goes on Sunday, he leaves the majority of his belongings in his parents' home. He leaves his laptop, his suitcase, a backpack. And before he walks out the door, he turns the heat up in the house to 95 degrees. And he turns on space heaters, leaving his mom's head to cook on the stove. And the dog, Jake, he also locks his parents' dog in an upstairs laundry room. He arrives in Baton Rouge early on Monday morning. He drives through the night. He gets medical treatment for his hands. He goes to another Walmart, and then he starts driving back to Knoxville. He's got to finish the job.
Right.
But that same morning, the Monday after Thanksgiving, it's Lisa's last week of work. And on that Monday, November 28th, 2016, Lisa doesn't show up for work at her usual 7 a.m. time. And she's always very prompt.
Right.
She's even early to the job, I read.
Okay.
She's not answering the phone at home. No one was. And she wasn't answering her cell phone or responding to text messages. And at 9:42, Lisa's boss, Jennifer Waited, calls 911 to say, it's very hinky that Lisa is not at work.
Yeah.
Not only is she not answering phones or texts, there's a retirement party planned for her that afternoon, and Lisa would not miss it. And she would have called, or she would have shown up. She would have let somebody know.
Right.
So a police officer drives to the house on Golden View Lane. Detective Ballard, he shows up, looks around, not very closely, and drives away. So at 12:42, Lisa's boss wants to file a missing persons report because nobody's listening to her.
Right.
So this time, Detective Jeremy McCord and Detective Ballard and Officer Jared Graves and another officer, Benjamin Gresham, they go to the house to conduct a welfare check.
Okay.
Again. And this time, Detective McCord sees there are two cars in the driveway and a for sale sign in the front yard, but there is not a realtor's box on the front door.
Hmm.
You know, the little box that they leave the key in?
The key in, right.
So he looks through the front door and sees all these groceries. He looks through the little side windows. There are all these groceries in the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Then they walk around back and the fence is locked. The front door is locked. Detective McCord and Detective Ballard climb over the fence after asking the neighbors if they had seen Lisa or Joel. And once they get into the backyard, they go to the back door and the back doorknob has been removed.
Really?
The door is locked, like with a deadbolt.
Right.
But the hole where the knob would be is just gone. Hmm. And you can see into the house.
Okay.
And from that hole, they smell this strange chemical odor. Yeah. And it's hotter than the hinges of hell inside this house.
Yeah.
And they call the realtor who says, yeah, there should be a lockbox on that front door. But Joel Michael had taken the lockbox from the front door and taken the doorknob from the back door and put it on the front door because he couldn't get the lockbox off.
Right.
And so he takes the lockbox and the door handle to the door. He takes it all off.
Wow.
And that's why there's a hole in the back door.
Okay.
Now, by this time, one of the officers has searched the two cars in the driveway. He finds a garage door opener. They open the garage and they can feel the heat coming from inside this house.
Mm-hmm.
And they let themselves into the house and they're shouting, welfare check. We've come to conduct a welfare check.
Right.
And when they get into the house, it's so hot and they're hit with this odor. And there are all these containers of chemicals on the floor just inside the door. And Detective McCord sees all these containers on the floor with a purse and two wallets that are sitting on a table. There's also a pot cooking on the stove.
Ugh.
They walk past that. There's dog poop in the floor all over the house, and there are groceries at the bottom of the stairs. Lots of stuff that needed to go in the fridge or the freezer. So there's food rotting away,
mm-hmm.
and Detective McCord's first impression was nothing here makes sense.
Right.
So they draw their weapons, and they start moving up the staircase. It's even hotter upstairs than downstairs. All this time, they can hear a dog barking and crying in a room. Mm. And as they climb the stairs, there's all this brown stuff on the walls. It's blood. It's cast off. And at the top of the stairs, there's a pile of clothing. There's some sharp instruments, knives, a bucket. There's blood stains on the floor, the walls. It's all over the place.
Wow.
And they look down the hallway into the workout room. And as they get closer, they realize what they're actually looking at. And Detective Ballard says, quote, those are hands, end quote.
Gosh.
Of course, he's beeped out.
Yeah.
But we know this because they're wearing cameras. They're wearing body cams when they're going through this house.
Right.
Detective McCord went into the master bedroom. He sees a roll of plastic on the bed, all kinds of stuff scattered on the floor. Through the master bedroom, Detective McCord walks into the connecting bathroom and sees all these tools and lights on the floor, knives, and two tubs with what appeared to be body parts liquefying.
Man.
this bathroom was the hottest room in the house because there were space heaters. The hotter the room, the faster the body decomposes.
Right.
So they both realize, holy cow, we're in the middle of this horrific crime scene, and they can hear this dog, but they don't know if there's somebody in there with that dog.
Sure.
And they back out the way they came in. They leave the dog, not knowing if the killer is in the room. So they back out, they retrace their steps so they don't contaminate the crime scene, right. And they call for backup.
Right.
And when they have loads of backup, they go back into the house once more and they clear the house. And that's when they take the dog who's been locked in the laundry room. Hmm. He's upstairs. They take him outside. They cool him off, get him something to drink, and they calm him down. So Jake, the dog, is okay.
Good.
As the officers are clearing the house, Detective McCord goes back downstairs to the kitchen. Remember? He's like, well, there's something cooking on the stove.
No.
And he looks inside this big stock pot. And this is when he discovers Lisa's severed head. These poor officers who came into this house.
How do you recover from that?
You don't, because I have seen interviews with all of them and they are scarred for life.
Well,
they really are scarred by this.
Wow.
The regional forensic center, the personnel from there, they came into the house and removed the body parts from the scene. But the liquids in the bins, a hazmat team from the EPA had to come and get the liquids because of the caustic biochemical properties.
Yeah. Wow.
They also find 3 gasoline cans with 15 gallons of gas each, a bloody footprint in the garage, a bleach spray bottle, trash towels, rolls of trash bags, bleach, muriatic acid, baking soda, and a lighter in the kitchen floor. Lisa's cell phone is at the scene. There are also all these blue disposable gloves, and the doorknob and the realtor's lockbox are in the kitchen sink.
Wow.
There are guns and boxes of ammo. They find the clothes that were cut off of Lisa and Joel, more caustic chemicals, a Bayco work light, a glass blender pitcher, and a Breville blender case. Mm. There are dishwashing gloves in the bathroom. There's the contents of a suitcase and a bunch of gray Banana Republic underwear. Come on, Joel, Michael, pick up your dirty drawers.
Yeah, exactly.
But also in Joel's room, they find a Miracle Blade 3 knife, a set of keys, another cell phone, hydrogen peroxide, medical tape, a knife marked USMC and 6 spacers, and a receipt from Walmart on Parkside Drive that said there was a purchase made at 3:35 p.m. on November 26th, that included isopropyl alcohol, antibiotic ointment, dermaplast pain-relieving spray, among other things. So Detective McCord takes a photo of the receipt and gets his butt in the car and drives straight to Walmart and asks to see security. And they pull up the video footage, and there he is, Joel Michael Guy Jr. And police show the videotape to Joel Sr.'s daughter, who now has gotten really worried that she hasn't heard from her father, and she shows up at the house.
Oh, no.
And she identifies her half-brother, Joel Michael, and he has his hands bandaged up.
Hmm.
Inside the house, by the way, can you imagine if you were the people who just bought this house and this happened just days before you were supposed to take possession?
I think you could probably get out of that purchase.
I mean, I read that they actually showed up during all of this, not knowing what was happening. Like, they were just going to drive past and look at the house that they had just bought.
Jeez.
Yeah. But inside the house, they're combing through what's there. And in the bedroom where Joel Michael was staying with all his gray underwear, they find a backpack. And inside is a calculator, an instruction manual for a residential gas water heater printed on November 23rd, 2016.
Okay.
A book from a co-op bookstore in Baton Rouge, umbrella, computer mouse, books with his name on it, and a black notebook with a syllabus for a fall 2016 class. And in that same notebook, pages and pages of handwritten notes. It's all his notes on how to murder his parents in order to get his mother's $500,000 life insurance policy. And by the way, she had to be employed to be eligible for her life insurance policy. And it was her last week at work. So this was his one chance to do this.
Yeah. Wow.
It lists all the jointly owned property. He's got all this written down, what he thought the house was worth, what he thought they had in 401ks. And when the police find Lisa and Joel Sr.'s phones, there are text messages showing that Joel Sr.'s debit card was charged $1,000, $2,000, and another $1,500 at the bursar's office at LSU.
Yeah.
Well, where do you pay your bill to go to school?
Yeah.
The bursar's office.
Yeah.
So now there's an arrest warrant issued for Joel Michael Guy Jr., and he'd actually shown back up. After he gets his hand sewn back up, he drives home. He turns around. He's driving back to his parents' house. He's got to finish the job.
Right.
He needs to liquefy them and flush them, grind them into something he could easily dispose of.
Right.
So he comes back, and he turns onto his parents' street, and he sees all the police cars and the yellow tape. And, buddy, he turned tail and ran his pansy ass back to Baton Rouge.
Wow.
But they use license plate recognition software, and they track Joel Michael's butt back to his apartment. Like, they have pictures of him in Mississippi, like just crossing all the way through Tennessee into Mississippi and into Baton Rouge.
Wow.
But on his way, he stopped at an Academy sports store in Pachuta, Mississippi, where he tried to buy a firearm and was turned down. So now the police in Knoxville are tracking Joel Michael Jr. to Baton Rouge.
Right.
And now they have the police department in Baton Rouge working on the case, too. Joel Michael goes back to his apartment. He parks his 2006 Hyundai that his mother bought for him and paid for him and paid his insurance on.
Man.
In front of his apartment at 5075 Nichols Drive, apartment A202, a place that his mother has also paid for. Mm. And when he went out to check the mail, they nabbed him and took him into custody.
Wow.
Inside his apartment, they find even more receipts. It's like this guy's expecting to be audited at any moment.
Yeah.
But the receipts show that he'd been buying the supplies to dissolve his parents' bodies 17 days before he showed up in Knoxville for Thanksgiving.
Man.
And they go and look at the surveillance footage of him at an Ace Hardware store outside of Baton Rouge. It's November 7th. That's where he's buying a jug of something.
Yeah.
And then they find more receipts. He bought more chemicals on the 9th and the 11th and then the 18th and the 19th and the 20th.
So he's not buying everything at once. He's just doing a little bit at a time so it doesn't look suspicious.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But he even returns a knife. He doesn't return it. He exchanges a knife for a different knife. Like, this one's not going to cut through. This one's not going to disarticulate my parents as well as the other one.
Yeah.
Then on November 21st, they find the receipts where he buys two bins at Walmart, the two blue bins. This boy's giving Walmart a bad name, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They search his car. They find in the floorboard Ziploc bags with loose pills. By the way, they do find prescription bottles with his name on them. Nowhere could I find what this kid was taking. I don't know if he was on antidepressants, if he was on any sort of antipsychotic drug, if he was on something for mental illness, but it never comes into play in a trial. So that's why I don't know.
Okay.
But in the trunk of his car, there's another large gas can, a meat grinder, a large kitchen bowl, and a kitchen mixer.
Jeez.
And another can of gasoline is underneath the trunk where the spare tire is stored.
Wow.
So they have this guy so red-handed. They've got him dead to rights.
Yeah.
They've got his murder book on how to kill and what he would gain from it and how he would carry the whole thing out. But Joel Michael isn't talking to police. He wants an attorney, and he gets one,
okay.
A court-appointed attorney.
Okay.
And this guy's got to be crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because when he's charged with two counts of murder one and abuse of a corpse.
Yeah.
And he refuses to take an insanity plea.
Really?
I read that he was actually offended that his attorneys wanted him to cop an insanity plea.
Well, that proves he's crazy right there.
Yeah. So if he's not crazy, what is his motive? Yeah. Really his motive?
Yeah.
Well, he wanted the money. He wanted to live out his life without responsibility or work. But was it more than that? Because while he's waiting in prison in Baton Rouge, he's waiting to be taken back to Knoxville, Tennessee. On December 10th, 2016, Joel Michael calls Michael McCracken.
Mm.
Quote, "So I have been so in love with you since we first met 12 years ago, and I always got insanely jealous. And it became blatantly obvious that I didn't meet any of the criteria. There has never been any question about that, physically speaking. You know, I could get bariatric surgery. I could get cheek face implants to give me more facial bone structure. So I wouldn't have that round thing, as you call it. That's just sort of been a wild fantasy of mine. We genuinely had a very, very realistic chance of being happy. If I got around to doing that, I pretty much f***ed everything up. Tell me I'm a f***ing idiot. Tell me why I did this, end quote.
Wow.
So was the money to just sustain his lifestyle, or was it to get plastic surgery, cheek implants, and bariatric surgery because he wanted Michael back?
Right.
Quote, I think about you all the time. You're the only good thing in my life, end quote. And then he starts to cry and says, quote, you're the only thing I'll miss. You should consider me dead, end quote.
Wow.
So these two are roommates in high school, and then they're roommates at LSU. And according to McCracken, of the 10 years they knew each other, he says 10, Joel Michael says 12, they lived together for about 5.
Okay.
But Michael McCracken didn't want him as a boyfriend. So did Joel Michael, in addition to not wanting to work and being cut off, did he just want this money for plastic surgery to woo his ex back into his arms?
Right, right.
But he's not pleading insanity. He does plead not guilty. Then he wants to be his own attorney. He wants to represent himself. And then he changes his mind and says, no, he doesn't want to be his own attorney, but he wants the death penalty.
Wow.
And you might think, well, this, he wants to die. He's ashamed of what, you know, he did to his parents.
Right.
He wants the death penalty because he knows it would mean that his trial and sentencing would be dragged out for years. And get this, wait for it. He wanted the insurance money from his mother's death.
Really?
Yeah. And in Tennessee, there's something called the Slayer Statute that says he cannot profit from this murder. And he thought he was still entitled to this money. And his argument was that the Slayer Statute only applied if he's convicted and all his appeals are exhausted. So he wanted the money now. And on top of that, remember, this guy's a loner.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be around other people. So if he's on death row, he'll be alone.
Right.
And he would be. He'd be there for years during litigation.
Sure.
So they say, no.
I don't think so.
No. That's no bueno. That's not working.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Yeah.
We want you in prison for the rest of your life, but we want you in gen pop. We want you in general population.
Yeah.
He told prison officials that he had fantasies of gouging out other inmates' eyes. And they're like, calm down, Joel Michael.
Yeah.
We know what you want. Calm down.
Yeah. It's like in Stripes, lighten up, Francis.
Lighten up, Francis. It's exactly what it is. So they go to trial, and this trial only lasts 4 days because Joel Michael's attorneys called how many witnesses?
None.
Zero.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's going to witness?
Zero witnesses.
Yeah.
But I've seen this trial. You can watch this trial online.
Okay.
And honestly, I feel sorry for this defense attorney. I felt so bad for him because there was no defense.
Yeah.
And if they don't have an insanity defense, what is there?
Right.
He stabbed them. He murdered them. He cut off their clothes. He stripped them, chopped them, cooked them, and tried to dissolve them.
Yeah.
Joel Michael's defense attorneys, John Halstead and Jonathan Harwell, have no evidence on his behalf either. But the prosecution, Leslie Nassos and Hector Sanchez, have 700 pieces of evidence.
Yeah.
The photos in this case were so gruesome, the judge had to make the decision to blur the photos of the body parts in the bins and the praying hands and the head in the stock pot.
Wow.
During the 4 days that this trial actually happened, while these photos are being shown, even while they're blurred out and forensic experts, pathologists, police officers, and detectives talk about these gruesome murders, Joel Michael watches. He does not look away. You know, sometimes serial killers will look down, look away. They can't look at what they've done.
Right.
He's very indifferent. He's watching the whole thing, but he looks like he is dead on the inside.
Yeah.
In closing arguments, the defense counsel gets up and says, on Thanksgiving Day, Joel Michael had been, quote, outgoing, friendly, and happy. They're using the words of his stepsisters and relatives at Thanksgiving that day because he was so unusually nice and interactive.
Right.
And what they say is that someone who's outgoing and friendly and happy doesn't equal to rage, anger, and death.
Okay. Whatever.
And the prosecution gets up and says, quote, outgoing, friendly, and happy, I'll bet.
Yeah.
He was so happy because he was planning his parents' murder.
Right.
He was found guilty of 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of felony murder, and 2 counts of an abuse of a corpse. Mm. But that's not where it ends.
Oh, no.
Joel Michael Guy Jr. files a motion that the police illegally obtained his personal property at his parents' home without a search warrant. He tried to make it out that he lived in his parents' house, that he was a resident there. And if that's the case, they shouldn't have gone through his stuff without first getting a warrant.
Okay.
To which the judge said, hogwash, Joel Michael.
Nice try, pal.
Yeah. Sell crazy somewhere else.
Yeah.
124 years will have to pass before Joel Michael Guy Jr. is even considered eligible for parole.
That's about 100 years too short, too.
It's true. Yeah. Today, the 35-year-old sits in a cell at the Northwest Correctional Complex in Tiptonville, Tennessee. Mm. As for the daughters Joel Sr. and Lisa left behind, they're trying to pick up the pieces of their lives.
I'm sure.
But from their victim impact statements, this family is devastated by the acts of their stepbrother.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad enough that your parents are murdered, but in the way that they were murdered.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. But that is the gruesome Thanksgiving story of Joel Michael Guy Jr. and his parents, Lisa and Joel. And that's all I have to say about that. Hey, Hitch to Homicide listeners, the wait is over. If you're a reader or a fan of my Sex and Lies series, Book 10, Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll is now available on Amazon. With a successful tour and 2 years of sobriety under his belt, rock star Noah Hart is ready to put his secrets and the past behind him. That is, until his former bandmates and business partners are murdered one by one, and suddenly he becomes the prime suspect. When FBI agent Louisa Hathaway is assigned to the case, no one, including her partner, is aware she carries her own secrets, including an undeniable infatuation with rock and roll's bad boy, Noah Hart. As the body count rises, Agent Hathaway is torn between unraveling the truth and falling for the man who might be the killer. Don't miss this new book, Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll, by me, Chris Calvert. Only on Amazon. Rock and roll will never die, but it might kill you.
That's got to be one of the most horrific murders that we've done.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
And all at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So all of our listeners, all our in-laws and outlaws, they're going to sit down at the dinner table and go, let me tell you about this guy, Joel Michael.
And if you have a relative that you haven't seen in years show up, just never mind. No, I'm just kidding.
Us true crime people, we have a problem with like wanting to talk about true crime with other people who maybe don't.
Yeah.
Want to talk about true crime, but maybe if somebody starts a debate on politics, you can say, let me tell you about Joel Michael Jr.
Yeah, exactly.
And why should we should all be counting our blessings today.
Man. Yeah. Well, let's get away from Joel for a little bit and let's do a little bless your heart.
Well, bless your heart.
All right. Number one, I'm calling this one.
Pac-Man.
Here you go.
Yay, I got it right. Yep. I'm an 80s kid. Yep. Yay.
Now, because human creativity knows no bounds, people are constantly coming up with clever places to cook, smuggle, and consume meth.
Okay.
Yeah, most recently, in the steady stream of innovators is Georgia man Jared Fournier, who tried to pawn an old video game console with crystal meth stuffed inside the game cartridge slot.
Oh, my gosh.
Fournier took the console, an old Sega Genesis, to an American pawn shop around 5 p.m. on Friday, WALB News reports. Okay. He handed it over to the employees who appraised the console. Now, while checking, making sure nothing was amiss, one employee discovered the meth inside the cartridge slot and called Colquitt County Police. Fournier was arrested and charged with possession of crystal meth, at which point he couldn't really deny.
So wait a second. Was it his crystal meth?
Oh, yeah.
Was he so high he didn't know he had shoved it in the Sega Genesis? Because then he's trying to pawn it off and he's getting rid of his stash.
I'm sure he just like put it in there to hide it and then forgot about it. If he's a crystal meth dealer, he probably has a ton of crystal meth. You know what I mean?
Oh, he's a dealer, not just a user.
I'm sure he is.
Oh, okay.
But the most important question is, was the Genesis in working condition?
Was it?
We don't know. But
oh. Enough of it, the crystal meth. Yeah, does that old Sega Genesis still work?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was interested in.
Yeah.
All right. Number two. Sorry, wrong number. In an odd twist of fate, a man accidentally called 911 while choreographing a string of burglaries. New York Magazine reports 911 dispatchers in New Jersey got the call earlier this summer and listened bemusedly to the call that was clearly a butt dial.
Okay.
Yeah, it didn't take long for the conversation to get juicy as two male voices discussed plans to break into homes, empty drawers, and steal watches.
That kind of juicy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Later that day, authorities received a call from homeowners who claimed their dressers had been raided and $1,355 worth of jewelry had gone missing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, thanks to the butt dial earlier in the day, police were able to pinpoint New Jersey resident Scott Robert Esser as the burglar.
Oh, Scott.
Yeah, Esser was pulled over and police discovered the jewelry in his car as well as a handgun and burglary tools. And now 911 dispatchers everywhere will think twice the next time they're tempted to ignore an obviously butt-dialed call.
What is this? Have you ever gotten a butt-dialed voicemail where somebody accidentally calls you, you don't answer,
Oh, yeah.
They don't realize, and then there's just like this long, like a 4-minute long voicemail.
Yep.
You can hear them talking to other people.
They're talking to the checkout clerk.
Or somebody.
Yeah, yeah. All right, number three, and finally, this is my favorite. Yin and Wang.
Not yin and yang, but no. Yin and Wang.
An Austrian man just earned himself a 3-year sentence for a vicious crime of giving someone the wrong tattoo.
Ooh.
A 21-year-old woman strolled into the tattoo shop with hopes of getting a yin-yang symbol. What she got instead was a penis permanently drawn on her body along with a popular word that begins with F. While miscommunication often plays a part in tattoo mishaps, this definitely was not one of those situations. The woman described exactly what she was looking for, and the tattoo artist even drafted up a preview, showing it to her before drawing what was supposed to be the same image on her body. Simple, right?
Simple.
Yeah. When she arrived home and took a peek under the fresh bandage, she then realized that he had given her something she didn't ask for. That's when she reported the incident to the police. If you find yourself asking why he would do such a thing, so did the authorities. And his response was, here it comes.
Yeah.
Just because.
I thought you were going to say, you know, no regrets, no regrets. It was going to be like no regrets or something like that.
No. And in addition to his 3-year sentence, he will reportedly be placed in a center for, quote, mentally abnormal offenders, unquote.
Mentally abnormal tattoo artists.
Yeah, exactly. So that's your yin and wang.
That's good.
There
that's
you go.
Good. Right. Well, if you have a bless your heart or you know somebody's heart who needs blessing, all you got to do is go to hitchtohomicide.com. There's a pull down menu where you can also suggest a case.
Do it.
We love that.
Yeah, you do.
We hope everybody has just a wonderful holiday this week.
Yes.
Get together with your friends and family. You don't have to get together with your family. Sometimes your friends are your family.
Yep.
But be thankful because we're awfully thankful for you guys.
Yes, we are.
That's my amazing husband out there.
That's my beautiful bride in the booth.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.